Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Monday, so this is an archive show, first published as a newspaper column sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on July 17th of 2016, under the headline, Supreme Court Once Declared Slavery Legal, But Only for Sailors. Here we go. Nearly everyone knows the dirty business of shanghaiing people onto sailing ships was a relatively common thing in the 1890s in waterfront port towns like Portland and Astoria. What almost no one knows is that most of that shanghaiing was perfectly legal under state and federal law, thanks to an edict of the Supreme Court, which actually proclaimed that constitutional protection against slavery didn't apply to sailors. The shanghaiing incident that led to this judicial whopper happened in Astoria, where sailors were always hard to come by and locals knew to watch out. Astoria, you may remember, is the port in which shanghaiers once were desperate enough to try kidnapping a Methodist minister in his own church. Unsuccessfully, the minister turned out to be an ex-prize fighter. There's an Offbeat Oregon column that tells that story, which is easy to find online if you do a search for Shanghai Astoria Offbeat Oregon. So when sailors tried to jump ship in Astoria, skippers tended to pull out all the stops trying to get them back. On one particular day, in May of 1895, the barkentine Arago put into Astoria. The ship had just left San Francisco, and Astoria was the first stop on an open-ended cruise to foreign and domestic ports, including Valparaiso, Chile, quote, and thence to such other foreign ports as the master may direct. There was no time limitation. The cruise would be over when the captain said it was over. Such contracts were the usual thing sailors would sign, or in the case of the Shanghai, be forced to sign, before embarking on a voyage. But for four of the sailors on the Arago, the trip to Astoria had been enough. In classic American blue-collar style, they walked off the job, saying, in effect, "We quit." Now, these sailors knew it wouldn't be that simple. For time out of mind, the private owners of merchant ships had been able to call upon local law enforcement authorities to force their would-be ex-employees to return to the job. They knew what was about to happen. In fact, it was part of their plan, because they, and the sailors' union they were part of, knew very well that forcing a man to sail on a ship, shanghaiing him, is compelling involuntary servitude. And involuntary servitude, a.k.a. slavery, is directly forbidden by the 13th Amendment, but nobody had ever challenged the practice in court before. So what they and their union wanted was to do just that, and they hoped to get a case before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court would then have no choice but to enforce the plain and blatant language of the Constitution. Yes, they'd broken their contract. Yes, they were liable for whatever costs the shipper incurred as a result. But could they be legally rounded up at gunpoint and returned to the master like a runaway slave in antebellum Georgia? Surely not. Surely the Supreme Court would put a stop to such practices, right? Wrong. In one of the most astonishing decisions ever to come out of the Supreme Court, the 8-1 majority held that sailors were an exception to the constitutional prohibition. The ruling was shocking to modern ears from start to finish. It kicked off by claiming that the government was allowed to use force to compel performance of a civil contract, citing, among other cases, the case of an actual runaway slave in Pennsylvania before the war. Then it claimed that involuntary servitude wasn't involuntary if a person signed an agreement to enter into it, in effect ruling that actual plantation-style slavery would still be legal if the slaves signed a contract saying that it was okay. Furthermore, it claimed that the Bill of Rights in the U.S. Constitution had been intended only to formalize existing practice, not to create any kind of revolutionary change from English law, an astonishing claim and very untrue, and that, therefore, the 13th Amendment wasn't intended to make major changes from established practice, other than, you know, that plantation slavery practice. Then, in a baffling attempt to establish the ancient tradition of involuntary servitude for sailors, it cited the laws of an ancient tribe of seafaring barbarians from circa 900 BC before moving on to approvingly cite the laws of the Hanseatic League of German traders in the Middle Ages, among whom desertion was punishable by a year's imprisonment on bread and water or by having the deserter's face branded. As for American precedents, the court asserted that all constitutional rights come with special exceptions to them, a claim it tried to illustrate with a series of really silly examples, that laws against carrying concealed weapons are an exception to the Second Amendment, for one, and that laws against libel are an exception to free speech, for another. The laws requiring cops to act as goon squads for private shipping companies, it claimed, were the same sort of thing, a special exception to the 13th Amendment. And the ruling finishes off, as if saving its most outrageous point for last, with this gem. Quote, "Indeed, seamen are treated by Congress, as well as by the Parliament of Great Britain, as deficient in that full and intelligent responsibility for their acts which is accredited to ordinary adults, and as needing the protection of the law in the same sense in which minors and wards are entitled to the protection of their parents and guardians." In other words, the court ruled, sailors were a special class of persons, unfit to be trusted with the full rights and privileges of citizens. The full text of the ruling can be found pretty easily with a Google search, or you can go directly to supreme.justia.com/cases/federal/us/165/275/case.html. Shanghaiing had, of course, been a real and growing problem in Oregon port cities for at least 10 years before this ruling came down, but after this decision, which became known as Baldwin versus Robertson, the real glory days of Shanghaiing came to pass. Having legal cover from the Supreme Court emboldened the captains and labor contractors in a whole new way. But it emboldened others, too. The Seamen's Union soon found that the very egregiousness of the ruling offended and mobilized social progressives and sailors alike, and what seemed a very clear attempt to thwart the intent of Congress in passing the 13th Amendment won the Supreme Court no friends on Capitol Hill. It took 15 years, but the ruling led directly to the Seamen's Act of 1915, which finally ended involuntary servitude on American merchant ships for good. Key sources in this story have included works by Joe Streckert, InterestingTimesPodcast.com, and the April 7th, 1920 issue of the Seamen's Journal. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 500 stories originally created and published in newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Offbeat Oregon is a division of Pulp Lit Productions, pulp-lit.com, which is a boutique publishing house owned and operated by yours truly, specializing in audiobook and multimedia editions of the work of the classic pre-war pulp writers. This podcast is covered under Creative Commons license type CC by SA 4.0. Basically, that means you can do anything you want with the content. Reprint it, remix it, add to it, songify it, post it on your blog, fire up the old Cessna and skywrite it, whatever you want to do, as long as you A, give me credit for it, and B, whatever you make is also released under a Creative Commons license. But hey, if you need either A or B waived, hit me up, fj@offbeatoregon.com. Don't let my old middle school principal fool you. I actually do play well with others. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a future episode, or maybe you'd like to get together and have a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and talk history, email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. And the next one will be a Friday episode, which means it'll be brand new. So until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.